The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Good to be with you on this chilly Monday afternoon here in the Midlands, our beautiful UK campus at Edstone. Of course, we're broadcasting live over the air in North Edmond on KPCG, North Edmond, Oklahoma, that is. And then the live stream, we make that available to you in audio format. Video format via YouTube, so we're certainly glad that you're joining us on yet another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and KPCG.fm. Lots to get to on today's program, including the ongoing story regarding this strike on the world's most notorious terrorist. That was now a couple of weeks ago, and the Trump administration still battling with the radical left to get the truth, out. Over the weekend, by the way, Iranian officials finally admitted to shooting down that commercial airliner, but then said that, of course, it's President Trump's fault. This was a Ukrainian plane in airspace over Tehran, shot down by Iranian forces. But Donald Trump, of course, is the cause. This is from Iran's chief propaganda minister, Zarif, who said, he tweeted, "A sad day, preliminary conclusions of internal investigation by armed forces, human error at time of crisis caused by U.S. adventurism led to disaster." And what struck me about this tweet, I guess it was Saturday morning, is that this is Iran's chief propaganda minister, and he's about 2 days late, 2 days after the radical left. We were hearing Democrats on Thursday of last week blaming President Trump, even when those initial reports came in from intel agencies. Well, we think it was actually shot down by an Iranian, a Russian-made surface-to-air missile. And sure enough, Iran admits it on Saturday, but the Democrats, the radical left, had already given them cover. No wonder they were quicker than usual to actually come out and confess. Because you can easily say, it's Donald Trump's fault. And that's what they did. Over the weekend, you had John Kerry, the former Secretary of State, who wrote an op-ed, I think, in the New York Times, talking about how the world was just wonderful, peaceful. All nations were getting along during the Obama years. He's not the first to come forward with that lie, that bit of revisionist history. Meanwhile, you have all of these protesters. We can't get a really good idea of even how many were out. There were masses of people, but we don't know the exact number because the press there, well, for one, they're not given the access to those state-run funeral processions. But the spontaneous protests against the mullahs, against the Ayatollah, well, the media, they don't get access, and plus they're not really interested because it doesn't fit within their current narrative, which is that everyone in Iran absolutely loved General Soleimani. He was revered. He was a hero. We went through a lot of this last week, but think about that one, I forget the name of the commentator, the news anchor, just raving about these crowds. And the Ayatollah tearing up, he was just overcome with emotion at this funeral last week. What are they saying about the crowds that showed up in protest over the weekend? that were stomping on pictures of the mullahs or the ayatollah. Well, they're not going to cover much of that at all. We'll come back later on in the program. We'll come back to this this killing and bring up some recent history of the way the Obama administration conducted its drone warfare. Yeah, you don't hear too much about that, but he certainly had a drone war going on throughout his entire presidency. He kept a lot of it under wraps, but what we know about it, it was deadly. There was a lot of collateral damage, too. There were a lot of targeted killings. Dare we say assassinations? We'll come to that in just a bit. I first want to begin with this ongoing saga with the beleaguered British monarchy. Today, the Queen is meeting with Prince Harry face to face. Amid all of these fears, as one story put it, that Harry and Meghan are going to go public after this split, after this divorce is made final, that these two are then going to go public, airing out all the dirty laundry of the British royal family. Tom Bradby, he had an article yesterday in the Sunday Times. This is a journalist who evidently knows both Prince Harry and Prince William personally, and he's written many stories about the royal family over the years. But he had a long Sunday Times piece yesterday about just how poisonous this family, this relationship is between the brothers, between these two camps in the House of Windsor. He said yesterday, some of the members of the family say Harry, and particularly his wife, come across as extremely difficult. They feel they have done their absolute best to create space for the newcomer. Harry and Meghan, on the other hand, find some other members of the family, with exception of the Queen and the Duke of Edinburgh, jealous and at times unfriendly. So they're both camps are trying to get out front to get their side of the story out there. And look at what it's doing to the royal family. Bradby said yesterday that the fallout began at the time of the wedding in 2018, Harry and Meghan's wedding. Really damaging things were said and done. The atmosphere soured hard and early, but few meaningful attempts were made by anyone to heal the wounds. Well, he went on to explain in his Sunday Times piece yesterday that Harry and Meghan are setting things up to make sure people understand that while they're leaving, they were in fact driven out. They were forced out. This was forced upon them. The Telegraph is the publication that referred to the beleaguered monarchy. It said this morning that the Duchess is unwilling to play second fiddle to her sister-in-law, Kate. Meghan wants to be right up there. The Telegraph says that Prince Charles has made statements saying that or indicating that they went out of their way to give them the wedding they wanted, the house they wanted to live in, the office, the responsibilities, doing everything that they could to try to make these two happy, to try to please these two. The Telegraph says the danger now facing the Queen is that this bitter divide stretches beyond the two brothers. That was made public a few months ago. The fact that the brothers they're not on good terms. And then the wives aren't either. But the worry now is that this bitter divide stretches beyond the two brothers to senior members of the family with burning resentment on both sides. Now, last week, I think the program is Tomorrow's News Today. Thursday, we went through some of this, particularly what my father says in the New Throne of David book about what has happened, particularly since January of 2017, just 3 years ago. And look at what we have witnessed the demise, or as we said back in that 2017 article, the fall of the British royal family. What a sad and tragic sight to see this. The beleaguered monarchy. The Daily Mail's reporting that Harry and Meghan have sought counsel from Barack and Michelle Obama. They're getting support from the Obamas, these two young royals. Daily Mail says Barack and Michelle Obama have advised the Sussexes of their plans for a new life outside the royal family. There was a commentator, by the way, the other day that was just talking about politics and how that the Obamas don't have quite the influence that the Clintons were able to have for 12, 14 years because Hillary Clinton was always the next possible candidate for president. And they said with the Obamas, they appear to be just enjoying their retirement and making lots of money with their books and speaking tours and such, as if the Obamas really don't carry or have that much influence anymore. And that couldn't be further from the truth. We still see the Obama fingerprints all over so many of these attacks against Donald Trump. We still see the Obama people showing up just like John Kerry over the weekend. Oh, yes, everything during the Obama years. It was splendid. It was a Garden of Eden utopia. Peace in our time. They are still wielding a lot of influence. And look at what, according to the Daily Mail, look at the influence they're even having on the British royal family. They're pretty close with Harry and Meghan. It says here, Harry and Meghan have become close friends with the former U.S. president and his lawyer wife and turn to them for help. The Queen's grandson and his wife want to model themselves on the Obamas, who have both brought out extraordinarily successful autobiographies. Talks about how Michelle Obama's autobiography has sold 1.4 million copies. Or no, that was in the first week. I think it's up over 10 million. 10 million copies. They want to do this. The Obamas have their Netflix show. They've got the book tours. They've got the speaking engagements. And of course, Harry and Meghan, they're looking at their brand, the brand they can create, a spinoff version, so to speak, of the royal family here in Britain. And they're looking at the Obamas as an example to follow, a model to aim for. Listen to this from the Daily Mail. It says, last summer, the Duchess, or Meghan, interviewed the mother of two for her, speaking of Michelle Obama, for her collaboration with British Vogue. Meghan also wrote of how Mrs. Obama had become such a globally respected public figure. She said, whatever your background, it's easy to feel connected to Miss Obama. There's something magical about the way in which she draws you in. Just something magical about this woman. This made me think of the section in America Under Attack about how that they used to swoon the media. They would swoon when Barack Obama came into the room. They worshipped this president and first lady. When they were in power, they could do no wrong. Obama would come out and correct them for something, the press, and the press would obediently submit. No pushback, no protest, no shouting down the president, because this was Barack Obama. So here are these two young royals, Harry and Meghan, and they're seeking counsel. They're seeking counsel from the Obamas. We wrote an article back, I believe it was in 2010, The Roots of Obama's Anti-Colonialism. And we referred to this book, the memoir that Barack Obama wrote, Dreams from My Father, From My Father. That was the subject of the book. These weren't dreams of Barack Obama's. These were dreams from his father. Who is his father? Well, his father, we don't know a lot about him, but what we do know, he fathered 8 children by 4 different wives. He was a notorious womanizer. Reckless reveler, says Dinesh D'Souza. He wrote about him in the, I forget if it was the Atlantic or it was a lengthy article that we then were commenting on back in that trumpet piece. But Mr. Obama, Barack Obama's father, he died in 1982 after he got drunk in a Nairobi bar, and then he rammed his car into a tree. So this is Barack Obama's father that he didn't know very well, but his memoir is dedicated to him for the most part, Dreams from My Father. Notice what Dinesh D'Souza wrote about Obama Sr. He says he grew up during Africa's struggle to be free of European rule, and he was one of the early generation of Africans chosen to study in America and then to shape his country's future. D'Souza said later on, while the senior Obama called for Africa to free itself from the neo-colonial influence of Europe and specifically Britain, he knew when he came to America in 1959 that the global balance of power was shifting. Even then, he recognized what has become a new tenet of anti-colonialist ideology. Today's neo-colonial leader is not Europe, but America. So the problem originally was Britain, and then when America was handed the power or the handover from Britain to America happened following World War II, then America became the bad guy. So it's this thinking that, as I said last week, everything that's wrong with the world today was caused by British and American colonialism. And this is what Obama Sr. said, that the African nations that had been colonized needed to rid themselves of all of that European influence, specifically British influence, and then later American influence. And you'll recall, some of you, that as soon as Barack Obama came into office back in 2009, he immediately removed the Winston Churchill bust, sent that back to Britain. And we had a fair bit to say about that there in the early years of the Obama presidency. Churchill, by the way, I saw this quote for our Churchill class that I'll be giving later today. Churchill wrote in his book, The River War, he said, "What enterprise that an enlightened community may attempt is more noble and more profitable than the reclamation from barbarism of fertile regions and large plantations?" What could be more noble, Churchill said, than bringing civility and prosperity and education and law and order to barbarism or nations steeped in barbarism? Churchill, as you know, loved empire. Barack Obama Sr., he hated it. He identified colonialism as the problem, not a solution to problems, but the problem. Churchill said, "To give peace to warring tribes, to administer justice where all was violence, to strike the chains off the slave, to draw the richness from the soil, to plant the earliest seeds of commerce and learning, to increase in whole peoples their capacities for pleasure and diminish their chances of pain? What more beautiful ideal of or more valuable reward can inspire human effort?" Churchill loved empire. He loved to see the empire spread. There's one historian, by the way, that said that that paragraph I just quoted to you from, that it could have been inserted in every single one of Churchill's books. He wrote about the history of the English-speaking peoples. He wrote about his ancestors. He wrote about World War I and World War II. He wrote about his people liberating Europe, removing the shackles of fascism across the continent, freeing enslaved people. He was a man of empire. And what a vision, what an inspiration that empire was for so many people of Britain, for so many generations. But not today. Today, all that history's been revised. Today, we've got to let go of that history. We've got to bury that history. We've got to condemn that history. The New York Times had a piece, I think on Friday, by Afua Hirsch. Black Britons know why Meghan Markle wants to quit, wants out. Black people know why she wants out. She's half black, remember? It's racism. Well, of course. Of course she wants out of this white royal family. They're racist. The British journalists, they're racist. That's what the New York Times was saying on Friday. Isn't that nice? This is the same paper that has the 1619 project going on. They're trying to teach all of you and all of the young people of the United States that the United States of America, its history, it was founded on racism and slavery. That's how the nation was established from the very beginning, the New York Times says. The Telegraph says, in response to that New York Times piece, by the way, it says, Ms. Hirsch's narrative conveniently overlooks the overwhelmingly fawning coverage that the Duke and Duchess enjoyed from their engagement to their wedding day. Her article also neglects to mention that the collapse in support for the pair coincided with a string of bewildering acts of self-sabotage, from banning spectators from taking photos at Wimbledon because the Duchess was present, to sniping at the public about global warming while whizzing around in private jets, and on it goes. I mean, they've done things that have alienated the British public from them. But you go back to the beginning and look at all of the fawning coverage. Piers Morgan, he tweeted out just a collage, a picture of all these front pages right around the time of Harry and Meghan's wedding. And they loved it here. They loved bringing the diversity and some of her background, even her baggage, into the royal family. They embraced it. And now we're not even 2 years on from it, and the New York Times across the Atlantic is accusing the royal family and the British press. Well, you're all racist. That's why she wants out, of course. The New York Times always trying to help the situation any way that it can. Well, I speak in jest. It's actually anything that can hurt, anything that can divide, anything that can really slanderously attack a founding institution, a royal family. It's important that we understand what's really going on here. This attack, as I said last week, the Jeroboam administration has replaced Antiochus, but that doesn't mean the attacks have stopped. The attacks continue. ITV had a special last night answering these charges of racism, these racism accusations. And here's how that went, clip 13.
There's a lot of accusations that not just the press, maybe, but we've been racist as a country. We haven't welcomed Meghan because she has a black mother and a white father. We haven't opened our arms to her mixed heritage.
It's laughable and it's so upsetting. I mean, again, go and look back at that wedding day. We celebrated as a country. People were delighted. Go and read the Sun editorials from those days. We thought that Meghan was a brilliant breath of fresh air and she was going to bring change to the monarchy. We celebrated. I'm sorry, Chris, if you were actually saying that you can no longer criticize someone who happens to be mixed race, then we've got real problems coming in this country. The criticism of Meghan is nothing to do with her race. It's to do with the fact that she has been incredibly hypocritical with political views that she has preached as a member of the royal family, by the way. This is a big deal. You know, members of the royal family are not meant to openly share their politics.
That's from ITV last night, a special that ran about 10:15, I think, last evening. But she's playing the race card, and she's already got the New York Times siding with her. She's the victim. She's the one that we need to have sympathy for. She's turning the radical left against the royal family. And it could well turn the entire British public against the royal family. Everyone knows there's lots of money wrapped up into that monarchy. And for the most part, people in Britain don't care that much about it. They know that the royal family is there to serve in many ways and to represent the British people. But you can be sure that as Harry and Meghan leave, there's going to be a lot of attention drawn to the wealth. Is it really any good? Does it really help Britain at all? Well, what about the poor people of Britain that could benefit from a transfer of wealth in that case? Sharing the wealth. This is really a pretty big deal when you think about the demise or the fall of the royal family. Think of the message that it sends to the rest of the world. It puts a house divided on display for all the world to see. And you can see why the royal family is very much concerned about, well, what happens when Harry and Meghan leave and they have their first tell-all interview. The Telegraph said this: one of the army's most senior former officers urged the Duke of Sussex to put Queen and country first. What about that? There's something to be said for putting the Queen and the country first. Of which the Duke is Captain General, said he would not raise a toast to him, this former officer, that is. The retired military chief urged the 35-year-old Duke to honor his pledge of allegiance to the Queen, while a decorated war hero described his decision to stand down with the royal family as disgusting. There's someone who's disgusted by this display of selfishness. What about serving the Queen? What about serving the country? Even when he made a statement last week, Prince Harry, he said he looked forward to collaborating with the Queen from here on out. It's kind of a joint effort, I guess. We all get some say, and we can kind of go and do our thing, and you can do yours. That's not the way the royalty have thought in generations past. I've played this clip. It's actually been a few years now. But this is 1947. This is when she wasn't yet queen. This is Princess Elizabeth when she was about to be queen. She was just a few years away from it. And here she is as a 21-year-old princess, a young lady, a young woman, just 21, talking about her vision for her role in the monarchy. This is clip one.
If we all go forward together, with an unwavering faith, a high courage, and a quiet heart, we shall be able to make of this ancient commonwealth, which we all love so dearly, an even grander thing, more free, more prosperous, more happy, and a more powerful influence for good in the world than it has been in the greatest days of our forefathers. To accomplish that, we must give nothing less than the whole of ourselves. There is a motto which has been borne by many of my ancestors, a noble motto, I serve. Those words were an inspiration to many bygone heirs to the throne when they made their knightly dedication as they came to manhood.
There's a motto, I serve. She draws inspiration from that motto to this day. And she was calling upon her fellow citizens to give the whole of themselves, to put their whole heart into empire, to serve the people, to serve one another. Meghan Markle said recently that she tried. They've been married. Keep in mind, they've been married a year and a half. She's been in the royal family for a year and a half. And she said recently, I tried to adopt the British stiff upper lip. I tried to do that. But as she went on to say, that's not the point of life. You've got to thrive. You've got to feel happy. And they've got all these grandiose plans now. They're talking to the Obamas. They're thinking about Netflix. They're thinking about memoirs. They're thinking about tell-all interviews. They're thinking about the Sussex brand. They're thinking about themselves. They just want to be happy, you see. And a lot of the language is couched in the, you know, positive mental health to make it sound noble, when in fact, it's very, very selfish. At its core, it's self-interest. It's not I serve. Where's that attitude in either Harry or Meghan? I serve. I've been brought up into this, says Harry. He should. To serve. I came into this a year and a half ago, says Meghan. She should. To serve. To serve the British people. To serve the United Kingdom. To serve the Queen. Listen to young Elizabeth back in 1947 from that same speech, clip two.
I declare before you all that my whole life, whether it be long or short, shall be devoted to your service and to the service of our great imperial family to which we all belong. But I shall not have strength to carry out this resolution alone unless you join in it with me, as I now invite you to do. I know that your support will be unfailingly given. God help me to make good my vow, and God bless all of you who are willing to share in it.
God help me to make good on my vow to serve, and God bless all of you who are willing to share in that service, in that sacrifice. Today, 2020, well, the Queen's, she's pretty old, 93 years old. Her husband's health is not very good. She needs help from the younger royals. She needs support. She wants a smooth transition to the next monarch. The Telegraph said the other day, to make the decision now, at a time when the family and the monarch needed the younger members to put aside personal animus, is in many ways unforgivable. It is unforgivable to make this decision now, of all times. The Telegraph said, but what they have done is shown disrespect to their family and to the institution which represent the nation. They represent the nation, and that's not good enough. That's not good enough for this young couple. They want to be celebrities. They just want to be happy. They just want to do what they want. I tried to have the British stiff upper lip. I tried. But it just didn't work out. It didn't make me happy. She had that interview recently. I should have played a clip of it when it happened. A reporter asked her how she was doing, and she said, almost overcome with emotion. Well, thank you for asking. At least you're one who will ask. A nice little shot at the entire family. As we're seeing right out in front of us, the demise of the British royal family. The fall of the House of Windsor. I said on last week's program, Thursday, remember that interview that Harry had with Newsweek, trailing him around, and he said he really didn't want to be a member of the royal family. I mean, he's been hinting at this, really, for the last couple years. He said recently, in the army, I wasn't a prince. I was just Harry. So that's what he wants. That's what will make him happy. He doesn't want to serve. He just wants to be Harry. Fabulously wealthy Harry, of course. Celebrity Harry. Remember on Thursday that article I referred to in the Trumpet, the fall of the British royal family, that was September of 2017. That's going back 2.5 years ago. And in that article, my father talked a lot about family. He talked about what would happen to this family, the House of Windsor, because of what was happening back there in the 90s with Princess Diana and her split from Prince Charles. My father said, now look at the fruits of that relationship. Watch the headlines. Look at what's happening to that family. Is it any wonder we are seeing such major problems? Tomorrow's news today, that's what I said last Thursday. It should not come as a surprise to anyone who reads the Trumpet. My father said, society is embracing terrible family-destroying perversions like gender fluidity, same-sex marriage, transgenderism. The royal family is throwing its support behind this movement. Even Diana, a generation ago, was promoting this cause. Is that a legacy you want to sustain? The royal family isn't promoting God-plane marriage. At the same time, it's supporting what God and his Bible label an abominable Sodom plain relationship. That's really what this family has been out there promoting. Bizarre lifestyles. Not tradition. What you heard in those clips from 1947, that's a lot of British royal tradition. But those days are long gone. My father said in the article from 2017, family is the most sacred of all institutions. Strong families are the backbone of a nation. When families fall apart, nations fall. That's what we're seeing. It's not just the fall of the British royal family. It's the collapse of our nations. Because we're seeing this fundamental building block of entire nations. We're seeing it crumble. My father, as you know, he writes about the new throne of David in that book that's been out now for, I guess, 2 years. His mind opened to that truth first back in January of 2017. He gave a program back in the middle of 2018 on the new throne of David. And listen here to what he says about family, about one unified royal family. This is clip 14.
This throne, this new throne, and David's throne always has unified people. It unifies this church. It unifies, or is going to unify the entire world. It's going to unify everybody. There is a new throne that's prophesied to be on this earth in the latter days, and that is the time that we're living in right now. And it's a monumental hope for this world. No matter what happens, as far as man is ruling over man, there is the best news you could possibly hear, and of course it's called the gospel. But this truth can galvanize your life and fill you with joy and hope as nothing else can. And I'm not just saying that, well, this is not a fantasy. You can do that, and it will work in your life.
You see, doesn't all of this that we're seeing in the news today, doesn't it just underscore the incredible importance and significance of one united royal family, of one family rallying around one throne, committing to that motto, I serve, serving the queen, or in this case, in the case of God's church, serving the king, carrying out his will, putting our whole heart into it. Look at how much this world needs the throne of David and God's royal family. Matthew 20 and verse 20, you're familiar with this passage, so many of you. It says, then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshiping him and desiring a certain thing of him. These two boys, these two disciples, they came to Jesus Christ. And, well, they wanted to be part of the government, but they kind of, they were just too selfish. They wanted the top position. They wanted the most authority. They wanted to be, well, right up there, really, next to Christ. They wanted to be ahead of the others. It's a competitive spirit in these two and in the mother of these two, James and John, these two boys. And Christ said unto her, verse 21, what will you? And she said to him, grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on your right hand and the other on your left, in your kingdom. What a request! They need to be right at the top. They need to be right next to you. They need to be on your right and left. But Jesus answered and said, you know not what you ask. Are you able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? And they said unto him, we are able. So they were sure. Their motives were sincere, and they were sure they were willing to make the same sacrifices, drink from the same cup as Jesus Christ. They had a pretty high opinion of themselves at this point. Now that changed later when they were converted to the truth, when they received the Spirit of God, the Spirit of humility, the Spirit of service. But Christ is giving them a royal education right here. And he said unto them, verse 23, you shall drink indeed of my cup and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. It's going to be given to them of whom, for whom it's prepared of my Father. I don't know. You're going to have to qualify. You're going to have to work. You're going to have to serve. And just get your focus on that. Forget about where your exact position's going to be. You're working along with Jesus Christ, the King of Kings. What an opportunity, what a privilege to be a part of something so grand and perfect and holy and just. Verse 24, it says, and when the ten heard it, they were moved with indignation against their two brethren. They became jealous themselves because they too were selfish. They too had a lot of self-interest. They too hadn't yet wholly given themselves over to the motto of, I serve. That's my goal. That's my objective. That's my responsibility. But Jesus called unto him and said, You know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. Another account says the Gentiles, or kings of the Gentiles, exercise lordship. But it shall not be so among you, verse 26, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. Let him serve, in other words. That's what the meaning there for the Greek word minister is. It means to serve. That's what a royal family's meant to do. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. You look into the meaning of that word, and of course it means slave. So if you really want a lot of responsibility, if you really want a top position, then you better take on a slave-like mentality. You better go into this knowing, as 1 Corinthians 6:20 says, that we've been bought with a price. We've been bought with a precious. We've been bought by the precious blood of Jesus Christ, brought into this to serve. Verse 28, this is the example that Jesus sets for us. It says, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. He served and sacrificed, even as a young man. He sacrificed his life as a young man in his early 30s, about the same age as Prince Harry, a little bit younger than what Prince Harry is right now, but a very different mentality for sure. Jesus Christ was the greatest servant ever. He came to serve mankind, and he came to teach you and me how to be a servant leader. How to lead in service. I serve is our motto. You could say that. I serve. Here's Jesus Christ. He had all this status. He had this exalted position, this authority from God. And yet he came and he didn't lord it over people. He had authority. He said, look, you call me Lord and Master. Well, that's good, but you need to do what I say as well. You're here to serve me, but look, I'm not lording it over you. I'm out front with servant leadership. So just follow my lead. Follow my steps. That's why we're brought into the church. God wants to highly exalt all of us. But those exalted positions of leadership go to those who are the greatest of servants. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
I will have to. I've got a pretty big segment on more on Iran and Soleimani and the Trump administration and the media coverage. We will push that back to tomorrow since we took a little bit longer, surprise, surprise, on the first segment. And we'll conclude instead with just a few comments from you listeners, feedback from over the past week. This one here says, it's painful to watch and listen to the media's constant Trump bashing. Another one here says, what a miracle. Thank God for saving the Australian Brethren's home from the raging fires. Oh, how God keeps his promises. That's in response to the email we read at the end of Friday's program. You'll recall where the listener from down under quoted from Isaiah 43 and verse 2, and how God says there that you can walk right through the fire if you have him guiding and directing your life. Another one here says, thanks for sharing that inspiring story. Another one, wonderful story about the survival of the bushfires, a real miracle in the midst of horror. Praise God. Another one here says, I feel certain that if our president included Nancy Pelosi in on any plans against our attack on Soleimani, she would have been as big of a traitor as Jane Fonda was when she betrayed our Vietnam POWs and turned in their SSNs that were given to her in hopes of help. Pelosi would have had the Iranians on speed dial and would have tipped them off. Keep up your amazing work. Your show is, it's a misspelled word, so the show is something good. Keep up the good work. Says the weird part, this is another one. Weird part is I never heard of some of these people before the election, and now I think they are high off the personal attention, and so the demons are using them, it says, to, a few words I don't quite get. Here's another. Good morning from Roxboro, North Carolina. My husband and I are so glad that we found this program. Well, good morning to you. It says, another one does, thank you for your courage to tell us what is really happening in this world. My prayers are with you. Listener from Boston, Massachusetts, says, love everything that you do. And then another one here. This is not in response to Friday's show, but this is in response to one of our videos. It says here, send me an invite for the campaign in February, please. So that's a UK viewer who wants to go to the Birmingham PAC, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. Another one here says, I love to watch Mr. Fleury every Sunday morning. Only problem is I wish it could be an hour-long show instead of a half hour. I learn so much, and I really enjoy listening to him. So please consider it, it says. Well, we'll have to tell that viewer about the hour-long radio show that needs to be 2 hours. In response to Thursday's show, that would be Tomorrow's News Today. It says, another great program. It's yet another nail in the coffin that was once a royal family worthy of being in awe of. It says how far they have fallen. Another one here in response to Tuesday says, very nice tie, Mr. Fleury. Thank you for that. I don't remember which tie it was, but I'll tell my wife. Another one here says, I have noticed the tie also. Two comments on the tie. Maybe this is from my wife. Another one here says, exactly, yesterday's news is today's news. Prophecy, it says. Another one writes, really informative program to tomorrow's news today. This one here comes from Mendelin, Colombia, way down in South America. It says, great program. Short and succinct. Another one here, continue to spread the truth in God's words. And then finally it says, it's increasingly difficult to listen to today's hypercritical, left-leaning mainstream news media. It must be gut-chewing to live day in and day out, constantly filled with so much hatred. Very sad. And then lastly, this one here says, I can't stand this guy. So they're not all positive. Most of them are. But, let's not finish on a total negative note. Let's see here. This is just unbelievably disgraceful, the way that NBC, CNN, and others are carrying on about the Iranian general. Here's a little reminder of NBC and the others about this matter. It says, a bishop that takes out 1,000 pawns must itself also fall. So that's in response to, I believe, Wednesday's show. Here's one that came in via email. It says, I took a new job starting January 7th, 2019, commuting to Columbus, Ohio. I was driving 100 miles each way and on the road 3 hours plus a day. I started each drive with the trumpet daily, and I'm writing to tell you what a tremendous blessing this program has been for many of us in the field. I don't know what I would do without it. I listen to some programs twice and recommend many of them to our young people. Thank you for all your hard work and passion that you put into these must-have programs. Your godly zeal comes through loud and clear and stirs me to do more. My wife and I discuss your program and others on KPCG on a regular basis. It is often a topic at the dinner table. Our prayers are with you and your family daily and with all those at Edstone. Love to all and keep up the fantastic efforts. Another one from Ohio says, I just want to thank everyone involved in the production of the program. I listen to it every morning as I work out, and for some reason, it makes me work out even harder. Well, that's nice to hear. He's getting in shape physically and spiritually. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email and submit some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.